Blog Talk Radio.
With no poetry. And in spite of the fact that there's no poetry, there is Eerie House Radio. Good evening and welcome. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
I'm not saying nothing without no poetry.
There once was a man from Nantucket.
Okay, I'm Dave from the Weirdness. Really bad movie.
I knew I could...
Oh, no, censors beware,
Save. Good save, Dave, good save. We certainly don't want to take a dark turn, at least not that dark turn, but the dark turn we do have for you tonight is the return of Jekyll and Hyde. That's right, more on Jekyll and Hyde. Not more on Jekyll and Hyde, but more on Jekyll and Hyde.
Oh boy, all those plays on words, we're going to have some fun with that today, yeah. No, this is, we really have a great rendition of the Mystery Theater with their actual, I avoided till tonight to actually have the actual story. We did all the parodies and the Jekyll and Hyde gangster and things like that. We still have another parody tonight, and we should have time for it, a wonderful Jack Benny parody of Jekyll and Hyde, his version of Jekyll and Hyde. But, of course, we have a wonderful CBS Radio Mystery Theater with Kevin McCarthy, who a wonderful actor. I truly enjoy. Of course, as we know best from the movie.
Body Snatchers.
The Body Snatchers. Yes, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Marion Seldes, who was a regular on radio. Court Benson and Ian Martin. Good old Irish actor there who also wrote a tremendous amount of stories for the Mystery Theater. But this is a story written by or adapted by George Lothar.
And that's going to be some kind of a listen. Now, Dave mentioned to me as we were warming up, as we are wont to do prior to broadcast, we kind of kick some things around, things we might discuss or little factoids we share with one another. And David mentioned to me that this particular broadcast from CBS Radio Mystery Theater was so popular, they repeated it 3 times.
Yeah, it was first on June 18th, 1974, repeated September 4th, 1974. That's not that unusual. But then it turned around and repeated again January 8th, 1978, and then again July 7th, 1979. Now, I can only think of one other show that I'm off the top of my head that was repeated that often, and maybe even more, their version of A Christmas Carol, which actually E.G. Marshall not only hosted, but starred in as Ebenezer Scrooge. That's the only one I know that actually probably repeated more than this particular program here.
And that one, we might dig up one of these Christmases coming up. Who knows?
Absolutely. It is a good addition.
That would be exciting to hear E.G. Marshall portraying a character in one of the radio plays from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. You mentioned a play on words.
Yeah.
You mentioned a play on words. Go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just going to mention that he hosted all those shows except for the last year and a half, I think it was, when his health kind of forced him to beg out of that a little. But that was the only show that he actually, and even in his narration that sometimes he was asked to break in on the story. I've got one called Terror in the Air, which he breaks in a couple of times during the story itself to move it along as a narrator. That's the only one I know of that he actually acted in.
And that sounds like a lot of fun. Now, you mentioned earlier, Dave, about play on words, as we like to do sometimes around here. And who was better at a play on words than Abbott and Costello? Not too many.
No one. Absolutely. And, Dale, we've seen a lot of people do takeoffs on that and try to do what they did and try to do who's on first and things like that. Nobody ever comes near it.
Nah, best I've ever seen is Big Chuck and doing that with a Cleveland twist on his television show.
Yeah.
But we heard something that sparked a memory in me last night when Lum and Abner were talking about Dr. Hyde, and they were doing a few play on words in the Lum and Abner episode we played.
Right.
Well, it got me to thinking. I have this internet friend, okay? We've talked a couple times on the telephone, so yeah, I guess we're friends, so to speak. The gentleman's name is Scott Essman. He's a professor in California, and he teaches film. And he has a great, deep respect for the old Universal classics. So I like this guy already, right?
Yep.
I mean, he's done some amazing features with his students, tributes to Jack Pierce, makeup effects artist, and other things like that. But he and his students, one time they made a cartoon, and the animation is really nice. The artwork is fine. But what really impressed me was the voice work. Now, they did Abbott and Costello Meet the Monsters very much in the same vein as the classic film Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Now, in Frankenstein, in Meets Frankenstein, there's no Jekyll and Hyde. You just have Frankenstein, Dracula, and the Wolfman. But in this cartoon, well, I guess I should just play a sound clip from it to give you an idea of the amazing work that these folks did putting this little cartoon together not only the animation but the voice work. These guys not only captured the voices of Abbott and Costello, but the flavor of their humor. Take a listen.
What are we going to do now?
Costello, all of the monsters we've delivered have gotten away. The bride, Hyde, the mummy. You got to find them and get them back to the museum before McDougal finds out.
Say, after we get the bride back, what's next?
After we get the bride, then Hyde.
After we get the bride, then Hyde?
That's right.
Hyde where?
Could be anywhere.
Hyde anywhere?
Certainly.
How about in the forest?
No, I don't think you'll find them there.
Who?
Hyde.
Why do you keep telling me to hide for? Why should I hide?
I'm not telling you to hide. I'm telling you, hide.
Hey, Abbott, do you want me to hide or what?
You're not hiding anywhere. Oh. What I'm trying to tell you is he's not in the forest.
Who's not in the forest?
Hyde.
Where?
In the forest.
There you go again. You just said to stay out of the forest.
That's right.
Then hide where?
Could be in the laboratory.
Okay, hide in the laboratory.
First place I'd look.
If it's the first place you'd look, what's the use of hiding there?
Now there you go again with the hiding.
You said that after we find the bride, then hide. Where?
Like I said, the laboratory.
Hide in the laboratory?
That's right.
Okay, so we hide in the laboratory.
Now what's the matter with you? Now look, when I say hide in the laboratory, I don't mean that you hide in the laboratory. I mean hide in the laboratory.
Look, when you say hide, you don't mean hide in the laboratory. You mean hide in the laboratory.
Now you've got it.
No, I got it. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Just a great, great job and a great comedy piece. I thought I'd share as part of our Jekyll and Hyde weekend.
Absolutely. And a great way to kick the night off, too. It's absolutely fabulous. A rendition of Abbott Costello and getting a play on Jekyll and Hyde as well.
Yep. That's and, of course, we want to say hi to Fogsbane and everybody else listening, live or otherwise, later in the archives. And,
I think some of the other people are hiding.
Yes.
They're hiding.
Hide where?
They're hiding on the internet.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's get things rolling here because we've got a bit of radio for you. And tonight, of course, we have the wonderful rendition by CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
And Dale, I also am saving you a lot of nickels tonight on this program.
Ah, that means we're going to hear some nice, good old commercials.
From the early 1970s, yes, we are.
Well, some of those are the best. Well, here we go then. Part one's a little lengthy. It's about 20 minutes long. We'll be back after this.
Hear your style. Aren't you glad? Hear your style. Aren't you glad? Hear your style. Dial washes away the cause of odor on your skin. You just can't buy a better deodorant soap than Dial. And that's saying something. The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. For nearly 100 years, the strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde has been thought of as a tale of horror, which of course it is, but it is also an intriguing mystery. For example, take the matter of Dr. Jekyll's curious will and the scene that took place one foggy London afternoon in the office of Jekyll's attorney, Geoffrey Utterson.
No, Jekyll. I will not be a party to the making of such a will.
You are my solicitor, yes, and my friend. Now, if you will not do it as my lawyer, do it, I beg of you, as my friend.
Everything you possess to go to this Edward Hyde in the event of your death or even your disappearance?
Yes.
Well, then you must tell me. I demand that you tell me. Who is Edward Hyde? Well, Jekyll, who is he?
Utterson, I wish to heaven on you.
Our mystery drama, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, was especially adapted from the classic by Robert Louis Stevenson for the Mystery Theater by George Lowther and stars Kevin McCarthy. It is sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour allergy capsule, and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Oh, somebody's been drinking my sugar-free diet 7-Up, and it's all gone.
Well, actually, I saved a little.
Oh, a bear!
Hiya, Goldie. What's brewing?
That's Miss Goldilocks to you.
Oh, come on, kid. You mean you don't remember me? The cottage, the three chairs, the porridge?
Baby bear!
In the fur. Been a long time, Goldie.
But baby bear...
Please call me BB.
You drank all the sugar-free diet 7-Up, and I have to conduct another diet drink taste test today.
Well, yeah, I saw the sign on the door, a professional taste tester, huh?
But how can I conduct my taste test now?
Why bother? I tried those other diet drinks, too. You'll notice there's still plenty of them around. Why not ask me?
Well, okay, BB. Tell me, why did you drink all the sugar-free diet 7-Up?
I like the taste. Light, fresh, natural, sugar-free diet 7-Up is definitely unbearably delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Come with me now, back through the years to London, England, in 1896. It is late of a pleasant spring evening, and we find ourselves strolling in Cavendish Square, along with Geoffrey Utterson and his friend, Dr. Mortimer Lanyon.
I must say I've enjoyed our walk, Utterson. We'll soon be at my place. Would you come in?
Oh, thanks, Lanyon, but I think not. I've got a good deal of work to get through before I go to bed. I needed a break, though, a breath of air, which is why I came for this walk with you. And...
Good heavens. That man coming toward us. Oh, strange-looking fellow, isn't he? Oh, his face in the light of the street lamp.
That's the most
evil face I've ever...
And he's coming straight at us. He's going to knock one of us down if we don't...
Oh, You fool, you knocked my friend down. You, hold on there. Hold on there, I say.
Let go.
No, not on your life.
Let go.
You not only knocked my friend down, you walked straight over him.
Sorry. Let me go.
Who are you? Are you crazy? Are you out of your mind? You walked on my friend as if he were part of the paper.
I've said I'm sorry.
That's not enough. By no means enough.
Who is this man?
Lanyon, are you all right?
I'm not sure. You walked on me. Stomped right over me. Who the devil are you?
I warn you, the two of you. Let me go.
Otis!
Let me go, I say, or I'll kill you both.
Look out, he's bringing that heavy walking stick, and he...
Kill you both!
Oh, no, don't!
You struck me. No one strikes Edward Hyde and lives.
No! He'll kill us both with that walking stick. Run out of us and run!
Come back! Come back, and I'll kill you!
Stop! Stop! I can't go on. My heart.
Oh, my too. It's pounding like a trip hammer.
Oh, good Lord, Hudson. I've never had such an experience of this kind in my life. Are you all right? You took a blow from that walking stick. Hudson, what is it?
Name. The name he used. Did you hear it?
Yes, but...
Oh, what was it? Oh, I think I know, but I want to be sure.
Hyde, he said, Edward Hyde.
That's what I thought.
Well, what of it? Well, the way you looked, do you know the man? Does the man mean something to you?
No. I don't know the man. But the name. Oh, yes, the name means something to me.
What? Well, what?
And I'm not sure I can tell you, Lanyon. I'm not sure I have the right as a lawyer to do so. On the other hand, I...
Yes?
Well, you are my oldest friend, and your daughter Beatrice is engaged to Dr. Jekyll, isn't she?
Yes, they're to be married in September.
Then perhaps I should tell you that... No, it would serve no purpose.
Why, Mr. Utterson.
Oh, good evening, Poole. I know it's late, but is Dr. Jekyll at home?
Oh, to you, sir, at any hour, I'm sure. Come in, sir. The doctor is at work in his laboratory. If you'll wait here a moment, sir.
Yes, thank you, Poole.
Excuse me, Dr. Jekyll.
What? Damn it, Poole, I told you I was not to be disturbed.
Well, I know, sir, but...
But what?
Mr. Utterson is calling, sir.
Utterson? At this hour? Well, oh, all right. Show him in.
This way, Mr. Utterson, please.
Thank you. Well, Utterson, this is a late hour visit. Jekyll, I'll come straight to the point. Dr. Lanyon and I were out walking in Cavendish Square less than an hour ago when we noticed a strange man, a sort of, I don't know, dwarf-like creature with, I assure you, a face that, well, it was so vile, so evil, it brought the sweat out on my brow.
Well,
he, this man, he walked straight into Lanyon, knocked him down, and then walked right over him. I ran after him, an argument ensued, and then...
Mm-hmm.
Well, he threatened to kill both Lanyon and me with his walking stick. He went into a rage I can only describe as... bestial, swinging the walking stick at us,
And what?
Well, I don't think he meant to give his name. In fact, he refused to give it when I asked for it. But in his rage, he forgot himself, and he used his name. Edward Hyde.
And? What of that?
6 months ago, you insisted that I destroy your old will and make out a new one, leaving everything to a certain Edward Hyde, right?
Oh, I see.
Now, I told you then, as I tell you now, I considered the terms of the will most curious, indeed decidedly strange.
And as I told you then, and I tell you now, I see nothing strange in wanting to leave my money to a certain beneficiary in the event of my death.
Or your disappearance. That's what I find strange. That's what worries me. Even more now in the light of what happened tonight. Jekyll, I ask you once again, who is Edward Hyde?
Do you mean the Edward Hyde I've bequeathed my estate to, or the Edward Hyde you ran into tonight?
They are one and the same.
There's certainly more than one Edward Hyde in all of London.
Oh, yes, I'm quite sure. But only one Edward Hyde who might have been carrying this.
My walking stick?
The walking stick I gave you several years ago on your birthday. I'd know it anywhere. Jekyll, are you in trouble?
Huh? What do you mean, trouble?
Well, this Hyde, does he have something on you? Is he blackmailing you?
That's a ridiculous thought.
Then what is it? How can you, Dr. Henry Jekyll, one of the most honorable and respected physicians in London, have any association whatever with a terrible person like this Hyde? Why have you made over your estate to him, especially when you're to marry Beatrice Lanyon? And why that stipulation in the event of your disappearance? Jekyll, I beg you, tell me what it means.
I cannot. I cannot.
But as your friend, I...
You are the friend you say you are. Oh, and you are, Utterson. You are. And then do me the favor of never mentioning Edward Hyde again.
Well, if this is your last word on the subject, Jekyll...
It is.
Very well, then. Good night. O'Poole.
Yes, Mr. Utterson, sir.
I'd like to ask you something.
Oh, anything, sir.
Who is Edward Hyde?
Oh, God help me, sir. I wish I knew. We all of us in this house, everyone of Dr. Jekyll's servants, wish we knew.
All right, tell me about him, this Hyde.
Dr. Jekyll was away on a house call, I think. The front door bell rang and I answered it, and there stood the... Oh, a frightful creature, Mr. Utterson, frightful.
I've met Mr. Hyde, I know.
He said he wanted to see Dr. Jekyll. I started to say that Dr. Jekyll was not at home, but he pushed right past me in the rudest way, sir, and went straight into Dr. Jekyll's laboratory.
Yes, I quite understand. Go on.
Well, later on, I was in the kitchen when the bell rang from the laboratory. I went into the laboratory, and there, to my complete surprise, was Dr. Jekyll.
To your surprise?
Why, yes. You see, sir, he'd forgotten his keys, and I was so surprised that he'd somehow got back into the house.
Well, did you ask him how?
Oh, I did, sir, yes. But he ignored the question. Never mind that, he said. I want to give you certain instructions concerning Mr. Edward Hyde. He then said that Mr. Hyde was to be admitted any time he called.
I see. Tell me, Paul, what is Mr. Hyde's manner toward Dr. Jekyll? I mean, when they're together, how does Mr. Hyde act toward Dr. Jekyll? Or Dr. Jekyll toward this Mr. Hyde?
Well, they're never together, sir.
That's puzzling. Very puzzling, to say the least.
Oh, Mr. Utterson, sir. All of us here are convinced that our master is in dire trouble. If you could help the good doctor...
Yes, Paul. Yes, I certainly shall, if I can. Enchanting,
Henry. Well, I had no idea you'd come into the music room. How long have you been there?
Only a few moments. When you become Mrs. Henry Jekyll, I shall insist that you play for me every night after dinner.
It shall be my wifely pleasure and duty, kind sir. Henry,
I'm sorry, but... Oh, Beatrice, I want you so.
And I want you, but until we're married, Henry, I...
Must we wait until September? It's such a long time.
Oh, father.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know you were here, Henry. How are you?
How are you, Dr. Lanyon? Utterson tells me you had a rather bad experience here tonight.
Yes, yes. But I'm quite recovered, thank you. Still a few bruises where that fearsome creature stomped on me, but otherwise all right. Something I've been meaning to ask you, Henry.
Yes?
But later. I don't want to interrupt you two lovebirds.
Oh, Father.
Well, I shall be in my study. Drop in before you go.
Of course.
Well, now, Henry. Where were we? Oh, yes. The wedding. No, now look, dearest. We can't possibly change the date now.
What if I insist?
I don't think I understand.
I say, what if I insist?
But, Henry, you wouldn't. It would be so unlike you. It is so unlike you even to be talking this way. You've always gone along with my wishes.
I have wishes, too. And rights, Beatrice, I have rights.
Well, really, Henry, really, you have no rights, as you say, until we marry.
Hmm?
It troubles me you should even say such a thing. In fact, Henry...
Yes? In fact, what?
Henry, I've been meaning to talk to you about this, and I keep putting it off because I feel a bit awkward, but... Well, to be honest with you, my darling, you're not the same man that I became engaged to.
Now, that's a silly remark.
Well, the way you've acted the last few times we've been together, there's something different about you, Henry. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but you've changed somehow, in some subtle way. Changed.
Huh?
Why, even your face.
What about my face?
Well, Henry, you don't have to snarl.
What about it? My face.
You're hurting me, Henry. Please don't. Really?
Sorry.
Sorry isn't enough. More and more you keep manhandling me, and then you say you're sorry. What's come over you? What's changed you in the past few weeks?
What did you mean about my face?
Oh, darling. Oh, it's only that... I suppose you're working too hard or something of the sort, but there are lines in your face that I've never seen before. Lines of tiredness, I guess.
Yes, yes, that would be it.
Shadows under your eyes. Why, even now they look darker, deeper. Darling, I didn't notice before, but I do now, I think, that you neglected to shave today.
I must go.
Go? You've only been here a few months.
A patient. Remember, a patient promised to visit. I'll drop in again tomorrow.
Was that Henry who just left?
Yes, Father.
But he said he'd drop by the study to see me before he went.
Yes, I know he did, but...
Well, Beatrice, what's happened?
I don't know. For a moment, I'd have sworn that... Henry was changing before my eyes.
A tale of horror, yes, but also, as I said, a mystery. At least it was to Mr. Utterson, Dr. Lanyon, and his lovely daughter, Beatrice. A mystery that was to turn to tragic horror before they learned the truth about Dr. Henry Jekyll. I shall return shortly with Act Two. This is Jerry Coffer for Kellogg's Special K. We've been having some fun in our television and radio commercials by using a ball and chain to symbolize the slight overweight problem common to so many of us. We point out that being a few pounds overweight is just a little more difficult for you. Climbing stairs, just walking around, even sitting down can feel, well, like you're wearing a ball and chain. In case you missed the message, it's this. If you really want to get rid of that extra weight, you really have to work at it by exercising and with sensible meals like the Special K breakfast. A 1 ounce bowl of Special K, America's favorite high-protein cereal, 4 ounces of skim milk, tomato juice, and coffee, less than 240 calories, nutritious, and by the way, delicious. So why not begin each day with a Special K breakfast and then keep up the good work? Special K can't help you lose weight all by itself, but it really is a good start.
You know, they used to call me Special K, but not in a flattering way. This is a very, very good version. I like his butler, Poole. A very good character actor played Poole in the 1931 version with Frederick March by the name of Edgar Norton. Just like in this story, in the movie, he was a very, very loyal man Friday, or butler, if you will.
Oh, sorry about that. Had an alarm that was going off across the room.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's my final warning, I guess. I don't know. Well, you know what? When you look at any of these butlers, usually they're very, very, very dedicated, except in comedy sketches, to whoever their bosses or their payer or whatever. Master of the house. I'm not sure what you actually would, how they refer to it. Their employee. I'm not sure. But
I think it varies from butler to butler, or from Man Friday to Man Friday. But very, very loyal and very, very concerned about his dear employer, Dr. Henry Jekyll.
Or Jekyll, depending on what era you're from, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Now, in this telling, we've skipped the experimental stage where Dr. Jekyll was creating the potion that we saw in some versions on television and in the movies. Rather, Mr. Hyde seems to be taking him over already.
Yeah, you're right. They did start this after he had already discovered that potion, but the potion is still a big play in the story.
And we'll find out more as we move along. Now, very well acted. You know, you mentioned Kevin McCarthy in this. Now, not only was he in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but he appeared in a lot of early science fiction and horror films. I've seen him in quite a few, actually.
Well, and isn't he a guy that kind of showed up in about every Joe Dante film?
Could be.
Even when he did the Twilight Zone, the movie, the segment that he did, which when they kind of overdid, It's a Good Life, he was, It's a Good Life, what was the one? The one where the kid wished him into the cornfield, but they redid that for the movie, and he played uncle. He played the uncle in that particular movie segment.
Yes. Oh, that's right. He did. Of course, he was older then.
Yeah.
But I know he played in Lights Out, the television series, of course. In the Inner Sanctum TV series, he appeared in an episode called The Stranger. Of course, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I know I've seen him in a few. He was in Climax, the TV show from the late 50s.
Yep, yeah. He seemed to have a lot more work in the 50s than after that, but he probably kept, he did keep busy. I always thought, you know, you listen to him, and he did quite a few mystery theaters. Actually, I could even take a quick look at that. He did... As I click on there, he did 25. He only did 25. I thought he did more than that. We've already played one that he did last year when we did The Fall of the House of Usher, along with Arnold Voss. A wonderful, and actually, looking over this, he did a couple other adaptions as well. So he did a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, Murder Most Foul, which was a Shakespeare story. The Transformation, Hound of the Baskervilles. He was in a tremendous version of that as well.
In addition to being in the motion picture Twilight Zone, he was in an episode in 1960 in Long Live Walter Jameson.
That's right. I had forgotten about that, where he played that professor dated back to at least the Civil War.
Well, actually, he played three characters in it because they were covering a few time periods, as I recall.
Yeah. I knew about that, but I had forgotten about that one.
Alfred Hitchcock Hour. An episode called Beast in View.
Hmm.
Man from U.N.C.L.E. The Moon Glow Affair.
Yeah, those were fun shows, those Man from U.N.C.L.E. They were just so much tongue-in-cheek. They were just, the only thing they didn't have that Get Smart did was a laugh track.
Yeah, that's the only thing that was missing. It was kind of hokey, like Wild Wild West, which Kevin McCarthy appeared in the Night of the Doomsday Formula as Major General Walter Crawl.
That's not bad work for a Canadian, huh?
Mission Impossible. He just was all over the place, particularly on television. But who could forget?
You know what he earned? He earned a decent living doing a craft he loved, and even though he doesn't look like he ever got, did he ever have a series in there that he did on television?
Not of his own, no. Made a million guest appearances. I mean, everywhere. Even in the Tales from the Crypt in 1992, in an episode called Curiosity Killed. One of your favorites, Batman the Animated Series in 92, as Dr. Long in Nothing to Fear.
Ooh, okay.
But, of course, who could forget him? The thing that I think we all fall back on is him screaming at the end of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, "You're next! You're next!"
Yep. And he even when they remade that, he made an appearance. He made an appearance in that remake.
Yes, he did.
I think he was just honored to be remembered, and therefore being a part of it.
Yeah. It's nice when these filmmakers do that nod to the originals by capturing some of the original cast when they've survived long enough for the remake to be made. But
yeah.
But before we stray too far from our story, we should probably move along to part two from CBS Radio Mystery Theater, The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
It almost goes without saying that to tamper with natural law will lead to an unnatural end. Mr. Utterson, Dr. Lanyon, Poole, and the servants in Dr. Jekyll's household have begun to suspect that Jekyll is hiding some awful secret from them. A secret that involves the man known as Edward Hyde. Even Beatrice Lanyon, Dr. Jekyll's fiancée, has begun to wonder at the change she senses in him. It may even be that the London police are beginning to wonder.
Come in.
Inspector Wolfe of Scotland Yard to see you, Dr. Jekyll.
Oh? Show him in, Poole.
Yes. This way, Inspector.
Oh, thank you. Dr. Jekyll?
Yes?
Leave us, Poole.
Inspector Wolfe of Scotland Yard, is it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Please take a chair, Inspector.
Thank you.
Well, now, Inspector, what can I do for you?
Hey, well, I'm not sure you can do anything at all, Doctor, but are you aware that in the past 6 weeks there's been a rash of murders in London? Extremely brutal murders, Doctor. Mm-hmm. Each victim has been bludgeoned to death.
Why do you come to me?
Well, on more than one occasion, the murderer has been seen while committing these terrible attacks of violence. Not clearly seen, since the murders have always been done at night and in dark streets, you know. But there have been glimpses of them, and putting them together, the Yard has come up with what you might call a composite picture of the man.
I still don't see. I just don't understand why you've come to me about this.
Well, you will in a moment, Doctor. The man, the murderer, appears to be a short, malformed, dwarfish creature who, even though his face has never been clearly seen, gives a strong impression of evil. Doctor, a particularly brutal murder took place last night in Montague Street. Dr. Danvers Carew was bludgeoned to death.
Carew, member of Parliament?
Aye, the same. He was beaten to death with a walking stick. And the murderer was the dwarf-like creature that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The person who saw the murder take place followed the murderer afterwards, you see, keeping at a safe distance, you may be sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, that's why I'm here.
Why precisely?
The murderer was seen to enter this house.
Oh, yeah. You must be... Well, I was about to say you must be joking, but of course, you're serious.
You don't happen to be acquainted with a Mr. Hyde, do you? A Mr. Edward Hyde?
Well, yes, but he's not an occupant of this house.
He doesn't live here?
No.
Does he visit?
Well, on occasion, yes, but I haven't seen him now in, months, I should say.
Uh-huh.
Hmm?
Friend of yours, is he?
No. Patient. He suffers from a nervous disorder. Comes to see me whenever he's in need of medication.
Well, thank you for your time. Oh, good day.
Good day, Inspector. Damn. Sorry to have kept you waiting, Poole.
Oh, not at all, Mr. Utterson.
What can I do for you?
Mr. Utterson, I'm worried, fearfully worried, about Dr. Jekyll.
Oh?
You remember, sir, we were talking a long time back, near 2 months, I should think, about Mr. Hyde. And you asked me if I'd ever seen Dr. Jekyll and him, Hyde, together.
Yes, just something like that, yes, and you said you never had.
Well, they are together now, sir. Not that they mightn't have been together before, but I know for certain that they are now. There are fights... Yes, fights going on in that laboratory between the doctor and, oh, that terrible man, Mr. Hyde.
Fist fight?
No, sir. Arguments. I hear Dr. Jekyll moan and groan and cry out, no, leave me be. Oh, Mr. Utterson, sir, I'm so afraid for Dr. Jekyll, so afraid.
Yes, well, you're saying that comes as no surprise, Poole. The truth is, I've known he was in some kind of trouble since he changed his will months ago in favor of Edward Hyde.
In favor of Edward Hyde?
Oh, yes. He's left him everything in the event of his death. But most puzzling, in the event of his disappearance as well.
Oh, sir, I don't understand it.
Nor do I. And to be honest with you, I've given up trying to understand it.
Then I must do what must be done.
What do you mean?
For the first time in my life, Mr. Utterson, I shall disobey Dr. Jekyll's orders. For his sake, I shall see to it that Mr. Hyde never enters Dr. Jekyll's house again. Mr. Hyde, never go away and stay away.
Damn you! You stole my key, so it was you. It must have been you, and now you bar me from the house.
And you'll stay barred as long as I'm here.
Fool, I warn you.
Warn away! You'll not enter this house.
Fool. Listen to me, Poole.
I'm listening.
I'm in trouble, Poole.
I need Dr. Jekyll's help.
He is not at home.
Let me come in and wait for him, Poole. I am in desperate trouble.
Then stay in it and be damned to you.
Father, what is it? I've never seen you so upset.
Well, read this.
My dear Dr. Lanyon, as you value my friendship and my life, please go to this very night to my home. Father, this is a note from Henry. What?
Yes, Ned, you needn't read any further. He asks me, begs me, to go to his home, enter his laboratory, and procure certain chemicals and powders, giving very explicit directions as to where I should find them. When the message was delivered an hour or so ago, I have just returned from following Henry's instructions. As you see, the message directs that I am to give these materials to whoever calls for them.
But what does it all mean?
Well, you are Henry's fiancée. You are close to him, closer than anyone else. He's obviously in some sort of difficulty. And if you know what it is, I charge you for his sake as well as your own. Tell me what it is.
But if I knew, I'd tell you. But yes, he is in grave difficulty. But whatever it may be, he keeps to himself. And what would it have to do with chemicals and powders and elixirs? Oh, Father, I don't know.
No. Lamb is retired. I'll answer the door. You retire as well, my dear.
No, Father, I want to send...
Do as I say, my child. Go to your room. I have a feeling that I'd best tend to this alone. Go now.
Very well, Father.
How damnably long does it take you to answer the door? Let me in. Let me in quickly. You took your own sweet time, man.
I...
Where are the materials you were told to get?
In my study.
Come. Let us get them. Come, come, come. Where are they? Where are they?
Right there on my desk.
Oh, yes, you did well. All seems to be here. Believe me. You misunderstood. I didn't say shut the door. I said leave me.
I didn't misunderstand, Mr. Hyde.
You know me.
From the newspaper reports of your murders and the general description of you, all of London knows you now, I should think.
Leave me. Go out and close the door and don't return until I'm gone.
Not until you tell me what connection you have with my friend and my daughter's betrothed, Dr. Henry Jekyll.
I tell you... If you value your sanity, leave me.
I will know the answer to who you are and what connection you have with Jekyll, or you will not leave this room.
Fool, Hyde! You fool! The police are hot on my trail. I killed the man.
No, I'm not surprised.
I went to Jekyll's house, but his blithering servant refused to let me in. That's why I sent that message to you.
You? Well, it was signed by Dr. Jekyll.
You don't understand.
And I intend to understand, or you will not leave this room, this house. Back off, I say. Yes, as you see, I'm prepared for you. This gun is loaded, Mr. Hyde, and I shall use it if need be.
You leave me no choice. If the police find me here, well, they will not find me. The potion is quickly prepared.
The potion?
Once again, leave me.
No!
Then, damn you, witness what you shall witness. You're as big a fool as Jekyll. You're given the chance to leave well enough alone, but no. You must know the answer. Well, you shall know it. Your friend Dr. Jekyll had a theory. A theory he talked about so endlessly, so compulsively, that he bored everyone within the sound of his voice. You know the theory, do you not?
Yes, I was one of the bored listeners. Yes, I know. Mm. But each of us contains within himself not one spirit, but two. A good spirit, an evil spirit.
What else? There was more.
Jekyll also believed that a way might be found, yes, via a potion... that would release that other spirit, the evil side of us, the side we all try to keep under control.
Exactly, and you all laughed, you... The mercury! Where's the mercury? You didn't bring... You did, yes, yes. There, here it is. Thank God. Yes, yes, you all laughed. You said it couldn't be done. And even if it could be done, you all said it would be madness to try it. You were right in one respect. It was indeed madness.
You, if I follow you,
You are saying that Jekyll carried out the experiment?
He did.
And it was successful?
Successful? For me, yes, for me. For him, tragic.
Well, you see, Dr. Lanyon, I am in control now. Whereas before Dr. Jekyll controlled me, I now control Dr. Jekyll.
What in God's name are you saying?
You shall see. Yes, in a moment. You shall see. There. Potion is ready. Before I drink it, I offer you one more chance to leave.
Go.
Well, in that case, Lanyon, God help you.
You drank that.
Why do you think I mixed it?
But it contained mercury, quicksilver, another. Mr. Hyde, what? My God, what's happening? You're changing before my eyes. You're getting taller. The hair and head changing color. Good Lord. What are you going through? You're becoming a different man. A different being. Heaven help you. Before my eyes, you've become Henry Jekyll.
Yes. Yes. And just in time. Please hurt your door, Dr. Lanyon. Let them in. I have nothing to fear for the moment.
And so, before the shocked eyes of Dr. Lanyon, Dr. Jekyll's secret is revealed. Edward Hyde and Dr. Jekyll are one and the same man. Questions arise. What did Hyde mean by saying he is now in control of Jekyll? What did Jekyll mean when he said he has nothing to fear for the moment? We shall see when I return shortly with Act 3.
It's a real hot day. I'm soaking up the sun, and suddenly I say antifreeze right out loud. My wife says, huh? And I say, haven't you heard that song?
You can never buy fresh on too early. Do it now, do it now, don't you wait. You can never buy fresh on too early.
It's a fact. A 50-50 mix of Crestone 2 winter summer formula and water, about 2 gallons for most cars, fights boilover because it helps your cooling system handle heat better than water. Fresh boilover protection and fresh corrosion protection, too, because only Crestone 2 has a patented silicone silicate inhibitor system. Nothing beats it for corrosion protection. Summer, winter, spring, or fall, you can never buy Crestone too early. You can only buy it too late.
Who can you trust?
I don't trust Mr. Hyde.
I know the first thing on a nice summer evening, first thing I think about is Prestone. No, I don't, actually. No, no.
I know, in case of feline freeze-up, so Hyde pays your toe, and sometimes your elbow.
That's right, yeah. My toe's going to do with that money, I don't know, but maybe my toe will want to go off to Tahiti or something, I don't know.
Who knows?
Who knows? Very compelling telling of the story. Just I'm just enjoying this all over again.
It is, and again, Poole shows his loyalty. He stands up to Hyde.
Yes, yes, and... If only we could have that kind of loyalty today, huh?
I just don't. I do have a few people in my life that are extremely loyal. They pretty much live in the house or visit often. Curiously, they share my last name.
There you go. There you go.
Coincidence? I think not.
Yeah. But yeah, it's the first time he's ever, that Poole had ever disregarded an order from Dr. Jekyll, from his boss, his mentor, his friend. And they are. I mean, your butler, your manservant, your your man Friday, whatever you want to call it, they are more than just somebody who works for you. They are your confidant and so much more. And to protect Dr. Jekyll, he was going to break the rule that he never had and that he'd never done before, and that was break a direct order from him. That says a lot.
It does, and the relationship is almost like a love that he has for his employer.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, when you see sometimes when somebody's been with somebody, you know, in the movies and such, when somebody's been with somebody for so long, and another that person passes and they expect them to stay along, sometimes they just leave. They just can't stay for several different reasons. And one of it is he was more loyal to the person that is no longer there. And they don't make a lot of money because they live there and they stay there and they maybe have a night off a week or a month or something like that. But they do have a little bit of time off and just a little bit of money. And their life and livelihood is there, taking care of whoever they're taking care of.
Yep. Not every one of them has it as good as Rochester, who we might hear from a little later on.
You just might.
Or at least his boss. we should have plenty of time for that, actually, as we're rapidly reaching a climax to this wonderful story by Robert Louis Stevenson, again, born on November 13th.
But since we're not on what? On was that Tuesday? The
13th? Yes, it is.
Since we're not on Tuesday, we'll go ahead and celebrate his birthday this weekend as we've done. Yes.
And he would be 168 years old.
My goodness, if he were alive, he'd be dead today.
Wait, what, huh? Such great stories he wrote. Treasure Island, Kidnapped, A Child's Garden of Verses, and The Body Snatcher. Quite a prolific author. From a wonderful, wonderful time, the turn of the previous century, not the one we just had 18 years ago, but there were so many, like H.G. Wells and Robert Louis Stevenson, and you had Edgar Rice Burroughs. Wasn't very much long after then.
Right, yeah.
Great authors that era produced.
And so prolific they were as well. And even Conan Doyle, you know, although he spanned back a couple decades, a full decade and a part of one before that when he was really writing, part of the reason I think they were so prolific is so in order to survive as a writer so many times, it's like all the Sherlock Holmes stories were serialized in the newspaper. And so you had to have so many parts and so many stories to earn enough money to survive. If you were lucky enough to get read that well, they could be combined and put into a book, or you could write the novels. Even Dickens, a lot of his things were serialized into the newspapers.
Yeah, it's a shame shortly thereafter in the 30s and 20s that some of the pulp writers didn't reach the accolades as some of the gentlemen we've just mentioned have, or the success.
Well, that's because so many of them wrote under different names, you know, because when you when you're writing about a character that isn't one that you created, you're writing, in a sense, ghosting for someone. You're not going to get the credit you deserve for your story.
Well, that, and I think I know a number of them had to write under ghost names because they were under contract with a particular magazine or a particular publisher. Gosh, even Stephen King has used a ghost name from time to time, Richard Bachman.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure for those similar reasons. But great storytellers and of course, a great radio show adaptation of the story tonight. CBS Radio Mystery Theater becoming a regular Saturday event around here. But as you brought up, pointed out not long ago, there's just so many of them that are available. Why not?
Yeah, and they're all told so well. At least, you know, the ones that, yeah, every once in a while you get an average story. But you know what? If you're doing well over 1,000 stories, you know, it's pretty darn hard. It was almost 1,400 episodes running seven nights a week. You know, how could you have an absolutely great story every time with really not much more than really a couple dozen writers, it seems.
Even Babe Ruth didn't get a home run on every at-bat.
Nope. No, he did not.
But this one's kind of a grand slam here, this story tonight, if we're going to use that metaphor, because I got a little chill there during the change sequence we just heard, and I'm kind of anxious to see how this one's going to wrap up.
You know, one thing that I thought kind of was different from this, from other versions of Jekyll and Hyde that I have heard, is that the Hyde character is almost unrecognizable in speech and such. And when he was making the potion to transform back and such, and he was very reasoning and carried on a very strong conversation. I just think that also, and it also helps to tell the story, but I think it's a very interesting contradiction to so many of the other versions of this.
It could be that the essence of Dr. Jekyll is trying to fight his way through. Let's listen to the conclusion and find out more about the strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Scotland Yard police, in pursuit of the murderous Mr. Hyde, arrive at Dr. Lanyon's house in Cavendish Square, just as Hyde is transformed into the noted and respected physician, Dr. Jekyll. Now, as the police urgently ring the bell of the front door...
Dr. Lanyon, you must answer the door.
I can't get up from this chair, Jekyll. My heart, I feel weak, faint.
Then I suppose I must let them in. Beatrice, how long have you been outside this door?
Long enough, Henry.
You know.
Oh, heaven help you, Henry. Yes, I know.
That's the police at the door. You'll not give me away.
Dr. Jekyll.
Inspector Wolfe, isn't it?
Yes, but what... one moment. Sergeant, place your men so every entrance and exit is guarded. Now, if I may come in...
Dr. Jekyll? Certainly. My dear, this is Inspector Wolfe of Scotland Yard. My fiancée, Miss Beatrice Lanyon, Inspector.
How do you do? Oh, no, 1,000 apologies, ma'am, but we're looking for a murderer. A certain Edward Hyde.
And what makes you think you'll find him here?
A description of him was given to every hansom cab driver in London. One of them saw him enter this house little more than half an hour ago and notified the yard.
Well, you've obviously made a mistake. This is the home of Dr. Lanyon. I am his daughter. We are not acquainted with anyone named Hyde.
I beg your pardon, Dr. Jekyll. You said something?
No. No. No.
Miss Lanyon, I should like your permission to search the premises.
Well, I'm afraid that's impossible, Inspector.
Oh, I don't think you quite understand. If our information is correct, Edward Hyde is in this house, and he's a dangerous man, Miss Lanyon, a murderer.
I'm sorry. No. Good night, Inspector. Inspector, I said good night.
Is your father at home?
Yes.
Then I must ask to see him. If you'll not give us permission to search the house, perhaps he will.
I'm sorry, Inspector, but my father...
I insist, madam.
Inspector, there is no Edward Hyde in this house any more than there was an Edward Hyde in mine when you called there.
Very well. I won't pursue this matter further tonight, Miss Lanyon. But Dr. Jekyll, I think we should have another talk, you and I. about your Mr. Hyde.
He's not my Mr. Hyde, Inspector. He's a patient I haven't seen in a long time. Should he pay me another professional visit, I shall certainly notify you. And now, sir, good night.
Good night.
Henry. Oh, Henry, what terrible thing have you done?
My darling. Oh, my dearest, I'm trapped by my own folly. Your father warned me a long time ago to give up my experiments. If only I had heeded his advice.
Well, heed it now.
It's impossible. It's too late.
Why too late?
I've lost control over Hyde. He controls me. Over these past months, he's grown stronger and I weaker. I never know how or when the transformation... horrible transformation will take place. Heaven help me, Beatrice. I have become Hyde's slave.
But it's not too late. We can't let it be. Father could help you, Henry. I'm sure he can. Come, come. We'll ask his advice. He'll know what to do.
Perhaps you're right. Yes. Let's see what he has to say.
Father, the police have gone and Henry's in fearful trouble, as you know, and he wants to... Father?
Dr. Lanyon.
Father, what is it? Why do you just sit there staring? Oh, my God. Oh, Henry.
Yes. He's dead. What he saw tonight was too much for his weak heart. Oh. Edward Hyde murdered him. Heaven forgive me. I murdered him.
All right, Beatrice. Jekyll, we can leave now, I think.
No, I would like to stay a little longer, Mr. Utterson.
No, child, they'll start to fill in the grave shortly. There's no need to put yourself through that. Come along now, I insist.
Oh, very well.
Beatrice, if you would care to dismiss your carriage and let me take you home in mine.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Utterson, but I'd like to be alone. You understand.
Yes, sir.
I'll go with Beatrice.
Oh, no, thank you, Henry. No, I really do wish to be by myself for a time.
I see. I'll call on you then tomorrow. If I am able.
No, I shall be busy tomorrow. There's so much to do winding up Father's affairs.
Perhaps if
I'll get in touch with you, Henry. Good day. Good day, Mr. Utterson.
Good day, Beatrice. Jekyll, join me in my carriage. I want to talk to you.
My own carriage is waiting.
Send it along. I must talk with you.
As you wish. You may go along, Johnson. I'm riding with Mr. Utterson.
After you, Jekyll.
Well, what is it?
I want to talk to you about your will.
Oh, what now, Utterson?
Oh, need you ask? You read the newspapers. You know this man, Edward Hyde, is a monster, a murderer sought by the police. God knows what your connection with him may be, what hold he has on you. And you needn't say he hasn't. He must have. Why else would a man of your reputation, a celebrated and respected physician, leave all his worldly possessions to such a human horror?
They're my possessions. I have the right to do with them as I wish.
And I, the right as your solicitor, to refuse to let you do
it. You can't stop me.
Well, perhaps I can.
How? In what way?
Not sure. I'll have to seek advice on this. But it may very well be, Jekyll, on grounds of protecting you from yourself, that I can have you declared incompetent to handle your affairs.
Incompetent? I incompetent? How dare you say such a thing to me? How dare you even think such a thing?
Jack, let go of my arm. You're hurting
my will. Is my will. No. Edward Hyde is to inherit everything in the event of my death or my disappearance.
What is the matter with you? Take your hand out. Good Lord, your hand. Jekyll, your hand. It's covered with long hair. The fingernails are becoming...
Hey, you meddling little pipsqueak.
Your face, it's changing.
Of course it's changing, you interfering muddlehead. Do me out of my inheritance, would you? Prevent me from inheriting Jekyll's wealth.
You? Oh, my God, you're Hyde. You are Edward.
Edward Hyde.
Yes, Edward Hyde. Edward Hyde, murderer. Murderer, Edward Hyde, monster, according to you.
Yes, but how could he? No, you're strangling me. You're... No.
Die.
Henry, it's Beatrice, let me in. Henry, do you hear me? Open this door. Henry, I've come to help you. No. Let me in.
Beatrice.
Henry.
It's the end.
Where?
It's the end, Beatrice. The end. The potion doesn't work anymore. It's useless. Hyde takes over whenever he pleases.
Oh, dear Lord. Mm. There must be something we could... What is this gun?
I meant to take my life and this horror once and for all. But he won't let me. I have only to pick up the gun and he returns. I no longer have any will of my own. He possesses me, owns me, like a demon.
What is it?
Hook, get out of here, Beatrice. Leave me at once.
You're changing. You're becoming Hyde. Let go of me, Henry.
Let go of you when I've wanted you. Land for you. Lusted for you, my lovely creature, all these months,
please,
huh?
Don't kiss me.
Oh, yes. Kiss you and fondle you and caress you and...
Please, no!
You're stronger than I thought. My beautiful Beatrice. Good, very good. That makes the sport worthwhile.
Stay away!
Come to me. From you? Stay away from you who were made for love. Would you deny a man a pleasure? I'll say you're very, very quick. Strong, too. Strong and quick. And desirable. Stop trying to elude me. You can't. You know, you can't. You are strong, but I am stronger. You are quick, but I am quicker. And oh, you are a beauty. And I a beast, eh? Beauty and the beast, eh? Beauty and the beast. Put that down.
No. Huh? You could stop Henry Jekyll from using this gun, but you can't stop me. Get away from that door. Let me out of here.
Oh, no.
Stay back or I'll shoot.
Go ahead, shoot. I didn't think you could. It isn't in you to kill even such a thing as me.
No. Oh, dear God, help me.
Just give me the gun right here, and then once you're in my arms...
No.
Don't struggle.
Please.
It'll do you no good. Oh, give me the gun. Give me...
Miss Lanyon. Oh, good heavens. Miss Lanyon. Miss Lanyon,
the gun went off and killed Mr. Hyde.
Hyde? But on the floor. That's Dr. Jekyll.
What?
See for yourself.
Oh, yes. I see.
But if the gun killed Mr. Hyde, how?
Don't ask any questions now, Poole. Not now. Just go and fetch the police.
As a baffled and distraught Poole rushes out into the storm to find a policeman, Beatrice Lanyon gazes down at the body of Dr. Henry Jekyll. Or is it Edward Hyde? I'll be back shortly.
Give your hand to a friend. Give your heart to your love. But give your allergies to contact.
Now listen carefully, because this message may surprise you. There is an ingredient that can effectively help block pollen's bad effect on your system. Sneezing, sniffling, drips, itchy red watery eyes. It's the antihistamine most prescribed by allergy specialists. And it's an ingredient in Contact. Surprising, yes, but the true wonder of Contact is how our tiny time pills keep this antihistamine working, helping up to 12 hours per capsule, all day, all night, Allergy is our business, too.
Give your hand to a friend. Give your heart to your love.
But give your allergy to Contact. Take Contact only when needed. Only as directed.
You may like to know that the adaptation of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde I've just brought you comes closer to Stevenson's original than any other I know. I think you'll agree it was as much a mystery as a tale of horror. Our cast included Kevin McCarthy, Marion Seldes, Ian Martin, and Court Benson. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division, The Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal and new sugar-free diet 7-Up. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Enough time for a little bit of a lesson. Erie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Geez, Degar, you don't always need a secret potion to turn you into another person. Usually it can be done with a couple of beers. There you go.
Yeah. Or something a tad bit stronger, but stronger than dirt. Much like Ajax, we have another quick story we can squeak in for you from Jack Benny. Dave, a quick word?
Word. I was looking for the date on this, and you know what? I didn't have a date from this. I think it is from the 19th. I honestly don't know off the top of my head. Sorry.
Doesn't matter. Jack Benny with Dr. Jekyll.
1841.
This evening we are going to present our version of that immortal drama, that outstanding Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Thank you, boys. You can go back to the Samaritan Institute. Now, in this epic, I will play Spencer Tracy's part, the dual role of Jekyll and Hyde. Dr. Jekyll, the kind, gentle, lovable character, who after taking a certain powerful drug changes into Mr. Hyde, the fiendish, horrible name.
Gee whiz, Jack, that's pretty hard to do, isn't it?
Yes, especially Mr. Hyde, but I'll be all right. I was rehearsing out in the hall before the show. Didn't you see me with my face all screwed up and my tongue hanging out?
Was that Mr. Hyde? I thought your feet hurt.
Mary, my feet kill me, but not that much.
The opening scene, ladies and gentlemen, takes place in Dr. Jekyll's office in early morning. As the curtain rises, we find his two secretaries seated at their desks. Curtain, music.
Hello, Dr. Jekyll's office. This is the secretary speaking. No, but I expect him any minute. Thank you. I'll tell him. Goodbye.
Hello, Mr. Hyde's office. Yeah, this is the secretary talking. No, he isn't in. If he wants, heaven help you. What? Goodbye yourself.
Gee,
I hope Dr. Jekyll is himself today, not that horrible Mr. Hyde.
Well, I hope he is, Mr. Hyde, so he'll think I'm beautiful.
Here he comes now.
Ah, good morning, Miss Jones.
Good morning, Dr. Jekyll.
Are there any messages?
Yes, Doctor. Mr. Allen called and said he couldn't pay his bill.
Mr. Allen, will you tell Fred not to worry about it? Any time at all will suit me. You see, Miss Jones, the poor boy doesn't earn much on the radio. He gets paid by the laugh, you know. Anyway, don't press him for the money.
All right, Doctor.
In fact, Miss Jones, just tear up his bill. See how sweet I am, folks, before I take the drug? Hmm?
By the way, Doctor, there's a patient in the waiting room. He's very anxious to see you.
All right, send it in. Ah, good morning, young man.
Good morning, Doctor. My name is Fingerwave. Otis J. Fingerwave.
Well, sit down, Mr. Fingerwave. What seems to be the trouble?
I've got a terrible affliction, Doctor. I walk in my sleep.
You do?
How often does it occur? Every night. Every night I walk in my sleep.
Hmm. Well, where do you live?
All over.
That's too bad. Well, look, young man, there really isn't a cure for your condition, but as long as you're here, I'll check you over. Now, stick out your tongue and say ah. Come on, say ah.
Ah.
That'll be $2. Next patient, please. Next.
Can I try for the $4 ah?
No, that'll be all, young man. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Doctor.
Anyone else, Miss Jones?
Oh, yes, Dr. Jekyll. Miss Carol Lombard just called and wants you to come over to her house right away.
Carol Lombard? What's wrong with her?
She's making a picture with Jack Benny, and she can't keep a thing on her stomach.
Hey, Francis had the same trouble. I'll run over later.
Oh, Doctor, your newsboy is here.
Oh, Johnny? Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Dr. Jekyll. You want a paper today?
Yes.
Here you are, sir.
And here's a dollar. Keep the change.
Gee, a 95-cent tip. Thanks, Dr. Jekyll.
That's all right, Johnny. I'll be back later, Miss Jones. Wait for me, will you, my dear?
Yes, Doctor. Gee, he's a sweet man.
It is midnight, and we find Dr. Jekyll returning to his office after a busy day calling on his patients.
Oh, what a hectic day. And goodness, look at the hour. Any calls, Miss Jones?
No, but Mr. Fingerwave came by a few moments ago.
Oh, was he walking in his sleep?
I think so. He had a do not disturb sign pinned on his pajamas.
Well, he must get his rest, you know. Miss Jones, I've had a very bad day, and I'm frightfully tired. Will you give me a glass of water, please?
Yes, Doctor.
And have you seen my powders around anywhere? Oh, here they are. Yes, my powders.
Oh, Dr. Jekyll, Dr. Jekyll, please don't take those powders.
It's all right, Miss Jones. Don't worry.
But, Doctor, you know what they always do to you. Please don't.
Quiet, Miss Jones. Quiet. There.
Please, please don't take that stuff again. Oh, Dr. Jekyll, Dr. Jekyll. Oh, Doctor, Doctor, why did you do that?
It's all right. It's all right.
Oh, Dr. Jekyll!
Mr. Hyde, to you. Get back to your desk before I break every bone in your body. Get back, you little worm. Where's my other secretary?
Here I am!
Oh, you are, you? Where have you been?
None of your business.
Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, 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 blah.
I'll take a letter to Fred Allen. Dear Rat, so you can't pay that bill you owe me, eh? Or you get that money here by tomorrow, I mean, or I'll put your adenoids back in. That's all. Oh, it's you.
You want a paper, Mr. Hyde?
Yes.
That'll be 5 cents.
Take it out of that dollar I gave you when I was Jekyll. And hand over that change or I'll kick your teeth out.
I'm going out for a walk now. A nice long walk. Before I come back, someone will be dead.
Murdered.
Murdered. And it may be that fish peddler.
Scene 3, Dr. Jekyll's office the following morning.
Yes, yes. I'll tell him as soon as he comes in. Goodbye. Good morning, Dr. Jekyll.
Boy, have I got a hangover. Any calls, Miss Jones?
Yes, Doctor. There's a gentleman waiting in your office.
Thank you. Wow, what a head. I gotta go back to liquor. Those powders are killing me. Oh, well. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Doctor. My name is Beaumont. Tex Beaumont.
Tex Beaumont. That name is familiar. What can I do for you?
Well, Doctor, I'm in a horrible predicament. You see, I'm a cowboy actor, star in Western pictures. But unfortunately, I work very little.
Yes, yes, go on.
The reason for that, Doctor, is my speaking voice. My voice is much too beautiful for a cowboy.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I'm not at all convincing. Even my horse laughs at me.
Well, that is unfortunate. But I don't see how...
But you must help me, you must. You see, when I go out, I shoot him and they'll kill him. No one's a believing it.
Well, as I say, Tex, I'd like to help you. But I'm afraid changing your voice is a little out of my... Hey, wait a minute. Maybe I can help you. You see this powder here?
Yes.
Well, by mixing it with water, an unusual thing sometimes happens. It may even help you.
Doctor, doctor, what are you doing?
I'm not going to take it. Not the way I feel. Now, Tex.
Yes, Doctor.
I want you to drink this. It may change your voice, your personality, maybe your whole career.
Oh, Doctor, I don't know how to thank you for what you're...
You can thank me later. Drink. Drink it all. That's it. Now, just a little more. Good, he's twitching. Now, Tex, how do you feel? Tell me. How do you feel?
Well, to tell you the truth, Doctor, I'm just kind of dizzy.
What? What was that? Say that again.
I beg your pardon?
Quick, quick, drink some more.
Okay, here it goes.
Never mind, you don't have to. Well, Tex, you sound like a real cowboy now.
Yeah, but my teeth are a little long, ain't they?
Don't worry, they'll stop growing when they reach your chest.
Okay, thanks, Doc. I'll never forget you for this, for it's blood on the saddle.
Well, it looks like Dr. Jekyll turned Cowboy into Andy Devine.
And once he did that, look at all the westerns that Andy Devine did.
He did. Well, time is a wasted away, but not a waste. It's been a fun show with everything we could find on Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, or at least Dave found for us. Next week, we're beating it. That sounds terrible. Drums, that is. We've got The Shadow with the drums of doom and Nick Carter, Master Detective, with drums of death. And even the shadow of Fu Manchu beating drums. That's Friday's show at 7:30 Eastern. Then on Saturday, we're still beating it with Mutual Radio Theater's Drummaker X-1, the Lifeboat Mutant. No, that's the following weekend. Excuse me.
Yep, yep.
So we'll have the Drummaker from Mutual Radio Theater on Saturday. That's next
and
weekend.
That is hosted by Leonard Nimoy.
Ooh, that'll be fun. That'll be a ton of fun. Well, thanks, folks, for joining us here. We had a lot of fun with Jekyll and Hyde. Just a lot of really good radio and split personalities.
Well, they certainly have come to the right place for that, didn't they? Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Okay.
Well, that was Dave, Dave, and Dave. So wishing you a very nice weekend. Thanks, folks.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Thanks a lot, Blog Talk, for screwing up the timing. I blame Blog Talk.
Well, the light went out at the right time, but that's about all that went out at the right time, so.
Yep. Well, it was a little latent today, the timing on this, but we surely did have a good deal of fun with some great, great radio. I'm becoming a huge, huge fan of CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
You know, and I know after we were talking last week during the Halloween week where we played some stuff that how you were upset that you didn't know about it, but, you know, I've really been studying about it, and I can't think of a Cleveland radio station that aired the Mystery Theater. Can you believe that?
Be just my luck.
Well, hey, I couldn't hear.
Of course
here,
I can believe it.
So.
We have the Browns.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, so we've got, you know, just all those wonderful stations. When I couldn't hear from here, I could tune in on my dad's big old radio down to Cincinnati. They aired it. Every once in a while we could pull in a New Orleans station that was a clear channel station, which means it was the only one allowed on that frequency throughout the entire nation. And late at night, especially in the wintertime, skies were not clear, but the clouds were just right. We could pick up the New Orleans station and listen to it on that.
Wow. And as I mentioned, though, I did have a shortwave that I used to tinker with and just, for whatever reason, never stumbled in to CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Some other weird and unusual things, but not CBS Radio Mystery Theater. That's quite all right, because thankfully that is one of the shows that most, if not all, episodes have survived, Dave?
I believe they have, again, because it was individuals and fans recording, I believe all the episodes that were aired have survived. So,
and,
yes.
the fates willing, we'll get to hear them all here on Erie House Radio, along with tons and tons and tons of classic radio programs, particularly horror, science fiction, and fantasy.
Absolutely, I know this is the part you're heading into, but you know, coming up after we're beating it next weekend, we have garbage in, garbage out. Computers gone wrong the following weekend. No more Martians after that. And Mayday, Mayday, problem in fight, a flight, except we may be sneaking a special guest, so we'll have a special program in there, somewhere in there, I'm sure.
In December, yeah. We're going to have a little fun with Vincent Price, hopefully, as we work on a very special guest for wonderful appearance by Victoria Price at Goulardi Fest.
Yes.
Just a couple of weeks ago. Boy, time flies.
Well, I'm telling you, it seems like only yesterday, but it was over a month ago now. Wow.
Yeah. And it was just a couple of weeks ago that we started having fun with Halloween. That was a hectic radio week.
That was one busy week of radio. A lot of radio that week. Yes, there was.
Ooh, a lot of radio.
So, yes, if you haven't caught up with us for that, we didn't just do the Friday and Saturday show. We also did a Thursday show and a Monday show and a Tuesday show, and had quite an amazing, even with the technical difficulties we had on the Tuesday night, on the anniversary of the War of the Worlds, the 80th anniversary of the War of the Worlds, had a couple of special guests in and had quite an interesting program, including airing of the War of the Worlds the way most people actually heard it. So that was,
and
if you haven't heard that,
if you're listening right. in the archives, we urge you to go back into the archives and listen.
That's right. If we can afford to, we pay you. If you can't, so we'll just urge you. So, yeah.
Yes. Well, it's been quite a weekend for you, and quite a week for you, Dave. Let's wrap things up a little early, take a little break, and gird our loins for beating those drums next weekend here on Erie House Radio.
My luck, and I get the bass drum.
Yes.
All right. Say good night, Jimmy.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the day, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.